God's sake. Expose me on the airwaves, why don't you?
Please do that in. I love that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the next stage. On this episode, we have the team of Kizbit, Mincia. We have Lara, Nikki, who we refer to as Gambin throughout as well, because that's the surname. And we also have Annalise, who you guys have met before through the Hasselmeyer episode. Let's go on this ride. Let's go.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to, I think, the second episode of season two. Oh my God, can you believe we're already in season two? Today, we'll be talking with the team of Kizbit, Mincia. We have Lara, Annalise, and Nikki here with us. Annalise, you guys have spoken to before because she's also forms part of Hasselmeyer, so you kind of know her voice a bit. But Lara and Nikki are brand new here. Say hi, everyone. So let's get things rolling, guys. So where did the whole, like, idea stem from? I want you guys to give me, to explain to me as if I have no clue what this thing is.
Well, this is my favorite question. Because the idea is like very much so, I hold it very dearly in my heart, like it's in a very dear place in my heart. So essentially, before I moved to the UK to study drama, whatever, I was talking to my nana, like, and so we're very close, my nana and I, and like, so a lot of summer nights, like I'm at her place, we're outside, and we're just talking. And she was like, oh, you're just embarking to this new adventure. It's going to be lovely. It's going to be great. So exciting. And I was like, yeah, but I'm also going to miss you guys, blah, 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 blah. And then she kind of said, you know what? But every time I started a new journey, it was so great. And I started like, what was your greatest like achievement? Like the thing that you're proud of? At first she said her kids, which is like, fair enough. You know what? I get it. Yes. But then I was like, apart from your kids, which is a given, what else is there? And she was like, when I opened my clothes shop by myself, like she, so my great grandmother had this grocery shop in Zabar, which is in Malta. And she had like this tiny, really tiny like corner shop where they used to sell stuff. And then she died and whatever. No one really touched the shop. And then my nana later on in the 80s, she wanted to help her family out because my nanu had lost his job and decided to open the shop to help support her family. And it was a massive success until like 2004, I think, because then she like retired and closed the shop. And now it's being used by my parents, so.
Is the shop still open?
No, it's an office now. It's still open, but it's an office now.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then from there, it's a long story and I apologize. But from there, I just realized that so many women, especially from the elderly generation, just don't think of what they did as achievements. It's like, oh yes, I just did it for my family and that's it. Like, there's no kind of pride from it. They're happy about it for sure, but their ultimate aim was, okay, so my family is happy and that's it. And it's like, no, but you did so much more. She inspired me to continue to do things in my life. Like I felt like, well, if my nana could do that, then I can do this, kind of. And then I was like thinking about how lockdown affected the elderly generation, how they couldn't speak with a lot of their families. And how possibly, because they're slowly passing away, unfortunately, these women's stories might never be heard ever. Because if you open a history book, it's mainly about males and about like a very patriarchal point of view of what's happening. And we were like, well, what about the women who did so much? Be it in their houses, be it by going out to a different country because they had to, or following their dreams even. They're not somewhere. No one has collected these stories and just focus specifically on women. And that was our aim, to just bring these stories to light. And since we are theater makers, that's our medium, using theater to do it. So that was the project. That's the project story.
How was it like setting up the team? Because from what it sounds like this idea was initially yours.
Yeah. So basically, I was then like, okay, well, great, I have an idea, but I'm not going to do it by myself because I know myself. If I don't have people doing it with me, it's kind of just like, you know, you set it aside, forget it, and then it just goes away, forget it. And I was like, no, not today, Annalise, no. So I told Gambin, Nikki, and I was like, okay, so I have this idea. I had a really shitty title for it.
I think it was Femme Fatale, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Shitty title.
I'm like, Anne, I love you. This is very cliche. We're keeping it as a placeholder, but it's changing at some point.
I'm shit at titles, so.
But I remember when she came to me with the idea, like, I really got touched by the story that she says of Fernanda and her. And her shop. And like, for me, I think I've never veered into community theater, and this was a great like opportunity to go into this theater. And Elisa and I have also, that summer, we kind of worked on this like short course where we were sending scripts to each other, so we already had this like kind of synergy of working together. So I thought that it's really clicked, so why not work on a bigger project together? And then from there, we kind of wanted to make the team a little bit bigger, just to have a bit more variety of backgrounds and expertise, which is where Laura Juice comes in.
Hi.
We all form part of the same theater company back in Malta before Annalise left. So we've all worked together, and it was really helpful to have that sort of familiarity, because we were like, we already worked together, but also we're totally okay, like, speaking our mind, being communicative, and that has really helped us in the formation. So when we were thinking of people, Lara was an obvious choice. So then, Lara, I don't know whether you can mention anything when we pitched it to you, what that was like.
I just remember Anne messaging me going, Lara, you have like 10 minutes to hop onto a call. And in my head, because we've worked on projects before, and I was thinking, oh no, something's gone wrong, or something's come up that we need to fix. And we hopped onto the school, and Anne starts telling me she had just moved. I think you were still in your first year in the UK, no?
Oh yeah, it was like my maybe second, third month in the UK.
Exactly.
I got really bored in lockdown also, guys, so.
Yes. And I remember we hopped on the school and we were like, how's the UK, blah, blah, blah. She's like, before I left, my grandma was telling me, because like, oh, she's really proud of me, but she feels like, you know, women of her generation don't have as many of these stories. And we start talking about it. And then she goes, so like, you know how I'm telling you about these things? Because I want to put up a show. And I'm like, oh, okay. But it was such an instant yes. Like, I think you told me, you're like, you take a few days to think about it. I'm just like, no, I'm in here, sure, yes, let's go. Because it's such a needed bank of stories. And when we sat down initially to figure out what it was going, I mean, the project has gone through a lot of cycles of change,
yeah,
of what we thought it was going to be. The point we wanted like a lockdown hotline where people could call, but like, how does that work? Logistics. And then we're like, okay, we'll collect these interviews. How are we doing that during a pandemic? But it was such, you know, like the heart of it is so big that you kind of stay there. And even though we started a project in possibly the worst time to ever start a community project, you just kind of keep pushing, because I think all of us really believe in this narrative that these women have so much to tell. And unfortunately, everything's been kind of pushed to the side.
Yeah. And we've been receiving a lot of amazing feedback and support from people, which we are eternally grateful for. Like, I'm gonna thank my team from now, because without them, this project would not have come into fruition. So thank you to everyone who has helped us on this journey. Much appreciated.
Yeah, let's delve into that a little bit then. So, I mean, it's very obvious that this is a personal interest project of yours, Anna, and it stems out to the rest of the team. But what kind of, like, external support would you say you've received on it? Like, was it something that you had a commission to do? Was it something that you've gone around to different people and be like, okay, would you like to have a stakeholding place in this? You know, talk about how the word kind of spread and what external support you've had for the project.
So, as you said, Toby, it started off as a very personal kind of project, but we realized very early on that, like, we needed to look for outside stakeholders, just like for, on one end, the theater side, so the community support, and be like, there are other people who have worked in these areas, what advice can they give us? But also, like, the financial aspect of a project like this needs a little bit of financial backing. So from the financial aspect, our main sponsor for this project is the Central Regional Council in Malta. And that's
just...
Yes, Anne? Yes, because they changed name, right? I forgot what the name is. Can you tell me what the name is?
The Eastern Regional Council now.
There we go. Yeah. Uh-huh. We're always trying to redivide the areas of Malta. So now it is the Eastern Regional Council. And basically, that was great because they wanted to sort of be a bit more present within their communities and within their regions. And we were able to do that through the interviews that we did. We also have got a small form of sponsorship from Gazammamo and Farsins. So that's also what we've done, is we've put that in a contingency pot so that in case, like, any urgent matters come up, we have that money to go to. And then from a theatre practitioner point of view, we've spoken to Charlotte Stafrace, who in Malta does these workshops with the elderly people called Active Age, and Lara's part of that community now. We've also contacted Angel Galia, who we've all worked with in some capacity, and she's also done a lot of these community projects. So she helped us come up with the structures of, like, okay, how are we going to reach out to these communities? How do we conduct these interviews? And then, like, on a smaller level, it's also our friends. Like, we also had our first draft script read, and Greta was there for it, because we also believe in, like, sometimes there's a bit of a mentality with theater where it's like, oh, I'm working on this, it's super secret, I can't tell anyone, I'm going to keep it to myself. And we kind of wanted to go against that mentality, where it's like, we have this community of support. Malta's so great because it's so small that it's very easy to get in touch with these people. So we said, let's reach out to people. Let's get their thoughts. Let's get their opinions. It can only help our project. And even with the first script read, like, we got so many great ideas and feedback that just, we went back to the script and it made it so tight. So it made it much tighter, and it brought it all together. So that's kind of like the whole bubble of, like, who we're working with. We've also contacted Spazio Creative and Teatro Salesian, which are two theaters in Malta, because at the moment, both for, like, the aspect of a theater of, like, let's get your perspective of, like, if you had to get this project and you had to program it, would you be interested in it? But also the aspect of, these places have spaces. These places have separate programs that work for elderly people. So we're kind of, at the moment, we're really getting feelers out there to be like, okay, what can we actually do with the project that we have in hand? So yeah, I think that's about everyone, sort of.
The bubble. I'm excited to see how the script looks like after that whole feedback session. Because obviously the memory I have of it is from that. And I'm really excited.
I think what's great is with those feedback sessions is, with that one, we knew that the core was strong. And I think that's the most important thing when you're working on a script like this. It is then, like, the external details that then help it grow and turn it into something even more special. And we're like, okay, we have these elements. How can we flesh them out? Or maybe this area of the script is a little bit weak. How can we make it stronger? So, yeah, I'm very excited for other people to see, like, once we have a final draft of what that looks like as well.
Mm-hmm. So you guys have kind of, you've talked a bit about this before, Anne, but I just want to, like, focus a bit more on it, on why the focus on women specifically. And I'm not saying this, like, in a bad way, because, like, yes, you go, I agree, but I'm just asking.
I think we started thinking about what kind of story. So we interviewed women over the age of 75, so we're looking at people who were born in a very particular era and grew up during
a lot of change and turbulence happening in the country. And you look back at logs and you start to read these stories about all these great men who were there for like law changes and were hardworking and helped the family and provide and whatnot. And that's all great. But when you look at the female aspect of it, it very quickly becomes, and the women were housewives. And we're not saying that they weren't. We had a lot of women we interviewed who were very present in their domestic life. But so many of them, like the story can't be reduced to just they were housewives. Especially when a lot of these women all took up other types of employment, all had skills that were very important to their families. I mean, we've interviewed women like Anne's grandma and my grandma, and who started like shops, who ran businesses. We interviewed women who dedicated their life to charity work and taking care of people like in hospice in their last moments. And you're like, wow, like that's a lot of strength there. We interviewed women who got their education, traveled the world, saw things and are still studying today into their 70s. We interviewed women who, you know, left the country when they were 16 with like 2 lire in their pocket, and they're like, okay, I'm gonna make this work. And it's kind of sad to think like, oh, all these incredible stories will be lost if we don't gather them in some way. And it became a question of like, why do we not have these stories collected somewhere? And we spoke about it briefly, but there's something very intimate about asking someone to tell you their life story, and certain questions we ask, you know, we try and keep them as open-ended as possible, but without fail, they always go into like very personal aspects of these women's lives. And all of the, I think nearly all of the women in our interviews ended it with like, it's not very special, but that's what I have. And we're like, no, like this is, you know, like this is amazing. I, even for the women who led the classic home life, like you start hearing about women who tell you, oh, because, you know, my mum was a nurse and I remember people couldn't afford to pay for a doctor, so they'd come to her and we had this room that she transformed to keep patients in, or you know, I decided that I would learn how to sew, and as a side business, I used to sew for everyone in our street. And it's like, I don't think you should think of your own story as that's all I have. Like, that's a pretty impressive story. And, you know, it's also nice for us to connect with our own cultural heritage. I think there's a bit of divide in terms of like, what do we remember about these women and these men and these families? Because that's, I think, as Anne pointed out, her grandma said, my kids were the biggest achievement. And that kept coming up in nearly all of them. This idea that these women were incredible. I mean, they went through post-wars, they somehow financed houses, they raised children, they all had separate special skills. It felt a bit like a waste that we don't have stories that celebrate them in more light than just, yes, the women were home. Like, okay, cool. What were they doing at home? What was happening between those four walls? And I think that ended up kind of enlightening what the play looks like now. What happens in between these walls? Who are these people?
If we can, let's delve a little bit into how you came across getting people to interview for this. So was it a case of you were like, okay, let's put an open call out? Was it a case of you started with someone and then they recommended it to a friend and then a friend of a friend and so forth? And what was like the interview process like? Like, you know, obviously I appreciate that you can't say too much because, you know, you don't want to say, I interviewed so-and-so from down the street. You can't give the exact name of the person. But like, you know, talk to us a bit about how you went about finding these women and how you conducted the interview process.
Okay, so we thought a lot about it because we really wanted to interview many women initially, but then we realized, you know what, this is like a part-time thing and it's impossible to interview a lot of women. We basically realized that we have to be realistic and that we should start small, kind of. And then in the future, if we want to interview more and everything and we get more funding, then we can do so. So our aim, I think, was 20 women, 25, something like that. Yeah. Which we managed beautifully. Like, it took some time because basically we issued an open call on social media. So mostly on Facebook, because we're like, probably that generation uses Facebook more than Instagram. If they use Facebook. So then we also had a conversation about that. How do you reach the elderly? Do you reach them through their families? So for example, I am scrolling through Facebook and then I tell my nun about it. Or should we just market it to the elderly? But in that case, how do you go about it? And then we were like, okay, so we should do different mediums to market the project, essentially. So yeah, so we started with some social media posts, which got us, like I said, like a grandson or a granddaughter saw it, told their nana called us, was interested, and we did it. And then we also started getting more traction. So for example, there was TVM, which is Malta's national, what do you call it? Malta's national...
broadcasting channel.
Yes, thank you.
Like a TV station.
Yeah, TV station.
Yeah. Ooh. Kind of like the
Television Malta.
The kind of like the BBC, but on a much smaller scale. Like way smaller scale.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Way smaller scale.
Yeah, not you didn't get the BBC themselves.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no. I get
totally.
You.
Yeah.
So
we went on a program there, and there was another Maltese TV channel that also wanted to interview us. So that was great, because in that way, some women were calling us because they saw us on the program that they usually watch, because a lot of elderly watch these TV channels. And it was great. So we were getting calls and we arranged interviews, but then also word of mouth. So, for example, my nana told a bunch of her friends, and I kind of forced some family members to participate. I was like, you know how much you love me? This is how you show it, by letting me interview you. No, they did it happily. Don't worry. No one was forced. So then, like I'm saying, so we went through the whole, how do we get the call out to as many people as possible, which we managed. And then it was a case of, how do we interview? So most of this project took place during lockdown in Malta / the UK, kind of, but mostly Malta. And we decided to hold them online as much as possible, because obviously we didn't want to risk anyone's health, especially in such a vulnerable community. So some of the interviews we did on Messenger, right? Which proved to be interesting, because it's not like Zoom, you can't record it. So we either had to like screen record or use phones, and like a lot of these things that you have to get creative with. Other times they didn't have Messenger, so we had to use like a telephone, basically, and you record the audio, you put it on speaker and you record it. So that was also interesting. Then some women we did do in person. So for example, I think all of our nun-nates we did in person, because it's like the same household that we were meeting. So it was okay. And also we asked if they were fine with it, and they said yes. So that was good. And then I think, yeah, and then there was like, no, never mind. Yeah, so those were the ways that we interviewed people. I had a thought and I lost it, but that's fine. Yeah, and then we asked them many questions, like differing from how their childhood was, like about themselves, their hobbies, stuff like that. And then at the end, usually we ask them like, what was your greatest achievement? And that was like our surprise question that we'd be so, anytime I said it with smiles, what was your like greatest achievement? This is so exciting, like tell me. Yeah, and it went really well. I feel like there was a second part to your question.
Toby?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember it now, actually. I was just very engrossed in the conversation.
Coming along, you know. It's coming along.
It's coming along.
Okay.
Yeah, because this is technically my question.
This one kind of has like two sections to it, and it's also the last one before we cut the break, so we'll have a little time for tea soon. So don't worry about that, guys. So why did you guys specifically pick women over 75? Like, why that age?
I mean, it started kind of from Anne's Nana, and we realized, like, okay, we want to target that generation particularly because it's the least documented. As in, we really struggled to find. In the early research process, after we did the interviews and we sat down to conduct kind of like, okay, what was happening in Malta? What was happening religion-wise, politics-wise? What did it look like? What did these women look like in the time that a lot of these stories were happening? Because, of course, we're not targeting... We speak about their childhoods, but a lot of our stories are based in their, like, early to late 20s, starting out, starting families, and establishing themselves. I think we really wanted to target this generation because so little is known about them. And we just kind of started to realize, like, okay, also this is the generation that a lot of our grandparents are in. And there was always this thread in this project where it's like, I want to collect these stories before they're gone. You know, this is like, if we don't do this, if we don't start targeting this particular generation versus, I know, people in their 50s, we might not have the opportunity to collect this bank of stories for a while.
That makes sense. It's kind of like you're fighting against time to keep these stories alive, even when the women will not be.
Yeah, I think it kind of, that aspect also shaped how we went about, because, you know, one part of the project, originally this was, you know, we're going to put up this piece, and it's kind of devolved and grown into, oh, actually, we're going to archive all of these interviews, so we have them. So even after the show stops touring and performing, these stories aren't lost. They haven't. I mean, even in the title, when we sat down to figure out what we're going to call this project, Kizbit Minsiya translates to like forgotten experiences or forgotten achievements. And that was the thing. Like, if we don't record these memories, they will be lost. And there's going to come a time when future generations are going to grow up and think about like, what were women like in that era? And they look back and they don't really have an answer. So it grew with us. So it went from like the interviews to like, we'll archive them to like, let's bring a photographer in. Let's see if these women want their photo taken. And we have that, you know, that remains with us. So it's kind of continued to grow on this idea of we're trying to keep, to restore, to remember as many of these stories as we can. So it can kind of go generational.
Mm.
That's really nice. You guys are making me miss my nana a lot. Oh,
we had a lot of those moments during this project. It's like, my nana.
No, there was something really interesting that I've just been thinking about through this entire conversation, which is, it's a bit of an abstract thought, but bear with us here. So, like, let's say when you're born, like, the timeline for everybody around you starts at that same point. So to you, your mum's life starts at, I don't know, 35, or your granddad's life starts at 66. You know, you forget that they have a whole life's experience behind them. Those kind of stories are inherently lost to you because you're just viewing it from the perspective of how long you personally have been around. So it's a really interesting concept, and I think that's why there's an inherent fascination with... this project about, you know, what kind of came before, because, you know, we all of us in this call right now, we weren't here to see it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it kind of really adds to the value and the sort of, the value, like the heartwarming effect of this project, really. It's an interesting thought I was just mulling over, really.
No, totally. I mean... the stories we collected, all of them had to be before our time, because we were asking these women about an age where they were, you know, your 20s, 30s, you're establishing yourself.
Yeah.
You're figuring out, you know, solidifying who you are as a person, what your family looks like. And there were things that came out that were like, even within our own families, that we don't remember that well, or we're a bit like, oh, I didn't know that happened, or that was real, that wasn't, that was... And it's really interesting because certain things that, of course, Malta has gone through such a big change. We're saying these women, a lot of their stories were in their 20s, so in the last like roughly 50 years or so. There are things that I can't understand as a woman living in 2022 in Malta. But you know, you sit down, or I sat with my grandmother, for example, grew up in the tradition of you go to church 5 times a week. Every day is dedicated to a specific saint. and there's a process of it. And it was really beautiful hearing about these things because when I grew up, I wasn't in that era. I didn't go through it. And things these women would mention that were like, that was a thing? Oh, okay. Or how did that affect your life? Or things that today we don't even think about. Like one thing that came up, we have a lot of women we interviewed that were teachers. And they spoke a bit about like, oh, there was a time when you got married, you couldn't work. So some of the few had studied to get a license to teach. And then they got married and they're like, now you can't work anymore. I know about it, I'd heard about it, but hearing it from someone who went through it is very different.
I would never have to worry about that now, as a woman in 2022, that wouldn't even cross my mind.
It's really beautiful for these stories to kind of get brought up and even just superstitions. We had a woman speak to us about it, and again, we all grew up with these grandma figures, and when you actually hear, let me tell you this story about this, it's so cool, it's like unlocking a hidden world, and it's just so close, but you kind of never really look at it properly.
Completely. Completely. Yeah, that was such a weird response. Yeah, like just like, yes, I agree with what you were saying. What's an interesting point you have arisen. Yes.
Oh, Toby.
No, honestly, I was just very lost with, you have such a natural engrossing way of speaking about it. You just get lost in the conversation. You know what I mean? Yeah. Anyway, listen, don't get lost like Toby. Go and have a break. We're going to be right back. We're going to be right back. And we are back with the company of Kids Be It Mincia. Listen, we had a very in-depth talk about the process of getting towards the show. Let's talk a little bit about the creation. So you could argue that the first part was research, now is sort of like the development. So am I right in thinking that you chose Maltese as the primary language for this piece?
Yes, correct.
I mean, it may sound obvious because, again, you are Maltese, you spoke to Maltese people about it, but why was it specifically you wanted to write the piece in that language?
So first of all, it became a good experiment for me personally, on a personal level, because I miss writing in Maltese so much. Being in the UK, you kind of need to write in English for tutors and lecturers to understand the obviously, because no one knows Maltese. So
that's just English people in general. They expect everyone to know their own language.
No, that's fine. That's fine. So that was like one reason on a personal level, but also the women that spoke to us used Maltese as their language. And since we kind of wanted it to be based on like a loosely verbatim piece, kind of, so it's based on what they're saying a lot. We felt that if we translated what they told us into English, then it wouldn't really make much sense, because then you need to think about culturally, how do certain phrases translate, like certain phrases just don't make sense in English or vice versa. So that was also another reason. And also, I think we need more theatre done in Maltese in general. I feel like, unfortunately, as we become more modernised as a country and more globalised, our language is getting lost. Might be a bit of a cliche. There's been a lot of debates about this in Malta. And I'm not saying that English isn't a good way to use theatre. Of course it is. And use whatever language you want to do. But personally, I felt like in this project, Maltese should be the dominant language. We did have some interviews in English. And in that case, we said, if we use that story, we will use English. But use it in like the setting that made sense. So for example, she would be an English woman living in Malta, hence why she's using English. We didn't really end up using that bit of the interview, but we might do it later on in a different story. But yeah, essentially that's why we chose Maltese, because we felt strongly that that was the language that reflected the project.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, especially when you're speaking to the older generations. And you said it yourself, as you get more modernized, our generation is way more comfortable and better with the English language because we're taught it so much more. And they're so much more used to Maltese. So I think like keeping to their roots and keeping it in a way which is very authentic to them is a very nice way of kind of keeping them at the core of it, but also helping the Maltese language get richer in terms of arts and things.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
Chef's kiss. Like,
thank you. Oh my God, thank you. Greta approved. Thank you.
So I want to ask you guys a bit about the writing process, because you guys are three writers. And how's that like?
What's the gig?
I have to say, everyone, like when we say we're writing it together, it's like, what, you're writing it together? How can that be? But it actually was much easier than we thought it would be. And I think that goes back to the fact that we work so well together. So that made the process like better, because obviously when you're going into something like that, you need to be able to work with people where you can be like, maybe this doesn't work. And you need to be okay with them knowing that like they're not going to take offense or they're not going to take it personally. So how we kind of went around it is, after we had done the interviews, we all analyzed and shared our works and kind of said like, okay, these stories are interesting. We like this aspects. We also did a huge mind map, which I have next to me actually, where we like mapped out a lot of the different common threads that were between each of the interviews. We're like, okay, so there's the aspects of family. There's the aspects of work. There's the aspects of what the expectations of women in a younger, like back in the past, there's all these things. And like, how can we find ways to tie these stories together, but actually show their individuality at the same time? So then we kind of divvied the women between ourselves, just on base of like who we connected with more. Even us three have different backgrounds. So for example, Annelise being from Zabar, if there are women that are around her area of the south of Malta, she's going to be able to understand those stories a bit more. So we kind of divided them between us. And from those stories, we came up with like little scenes and little monologues. Just we were kind of spitballing ideas and trying to be like, okay, how can we bring these stories to life? Then we came together, the three of us, and we read through all of these stories. And that's where we kind of started piecing together and be like, okay, there's something interesting here. Let's keep this. And maybe we need a little bit less of this. Or how can we find a way to take this story and infuse it into another one? So where do these narratives cross? Where do these narratives join together? We also had a question of like, because we said, if we list all of these stories, we're going to have so many characters, it's going to be this jarring. So how can we bring all these stories together? So what we ended up creating is like a 40-minute or so monologue about this woman in her 20s. And the ideas that she is speaking about all the women in her family. She has two other sisters, she has her mother, she has her grandmother. And in that way, she's able to tell the stories of her whole family. But because it's rooted in one person and it's from one perspective, it's kind of easier to follow because it's just like you're having a conversation with someone. So then once we kind of identified these stories and how we wanted to include it, I think one of the hardest things that comes into this is identifying a character's voice. Because when you have three writers, you run the risk of being like, it's something like three different people write it. And that is like the worst possible, like that's the biggest pitfall you could have. So there you kind of have to sit amongst each other and be like, okay, of the pieces that we've written, where is the voice that we like the most? And then by method of elimination, the person who wrote the piece that had the voice we like the most then skims through everything we've written and kind of says, okay, let's make it consistent. Make sure there's a through line. And that kind of works. There's a benefit to that because while that person tries to make it consistent, you have the other two people on the outside saying like, okay, we're a little bit on the outside of this process. Let's see whether for us it makes sense or not. And I think another benefit from writing in a group is that we kind of, in our weaknesses and our strengths, we kind of fit together very nicely. So for example, Lara has a way with words when it comes to writing in Maltese. Annalise understands a lot of the Maltese isms and what makes Maltese people tick. I like inserting these little moments of humor or levity. So like, even if we're talking about difficult subjects, we're trying to find some light in them. And for example, for me, I would say that of the three of us, my Maltese is probably the weakest. But because I am with two people who have stronger Maltese writing, we're able to balance each other out to make sure that the product that we have in the end is a good product. So I would actually like consider co-writing again, just because it is a really fun process. And it goes away a bit from the traditional idea of like a writer, the screen of their laptop, the blanket over their head, typing till 4 a.m. in the morning. It's a very solitary process. Whereas with this one, it's the three of us. We're all friends. We've like all these writing sessions. We've had so many laughs, so many giggles. We've had like throwing ideas off the wall, gone on so many different tangents. And I think it just makes the writing process altogether a lot more enjoyable and less solitary. So I think we've actually managed quite well, I would say.
And I think we also managed it because we were so organized. But organization was key.
That too. If you had to, Greta, if you had to look at our Google Drive, you would be proud. Because we are queens of folders and different, like every meeting we have meeting notes as well. Just so that in a project like this, also because Annalise is abroad, yeah, it's easier to work online. And I think that's a nice thing that has proved with the pandemic is that even though we might not be physically having meetings, there's still a way to be organized and to be creative. You just need to find a way that works best for you and kind of fits. Like, for example, this whole thing of co-writing on Google Docs has really made the things really easy and simple rather than having us to constantly meet up in person. You know what I mean?
This is why I love Google.
And
like
Google Docs is amazing. Greta is a Google ambassador, practically.
It's at work. When at work, when I'm writing things and I need to get like feedback from someone, we just open it up at the same time, so we both can write and we're both editing it at the same time. And we just both can see, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, you anyway. Get that sponsorship money.
Anyway,
no, genuinely, it was a tool in our tool belt that became so important because. Even in terms of, you don't think about it when you're writing on your own because, you know, you save a document as like Kizbit Mincia draft 1.2, 1.3, then you lose the numbers and it's whatever. But it's very difficult to the organization where it's three people and like, you're going to change this, you're going to change that. I think the big thing that we had was like the trust that I can just go, I know I wrote this scene, but now it's in your hands. Up to you. But I think Nick hit on the language thing, and I think it's important, especially within our Maltese cultural context, in that we tend to find that if you're someone who is English speaking or someone who is Maltese speaking, you stick to theatre within that language, within that comfort zone. And I think a project like this kind of proves that you can work around it, you know? If Nick's more comfortable in English, that's fine. You find ways to incorporate. We are a bilingual group of creatives and it shouldn't stop you, and we spoke about this a little bit when we were discussing like who this woman is, where is she from,
But certain stories that, like, for example, Nick's grandmother has a set of stories that my grandmother probably wouldn't have because of where they grew up in and what their family lives were like. So it's really enriched the story and made it even more complex. And I think we still have an issue in this country, as Anne mentioned, where we just kind of go for one thing because it's easier.
Would you say then that gender was considered a factor when you were setting up the team?
I think 100%. We are very proud to say that, like, we're a team that is channeled by women. It is a project for women, by women. And even though I might be, I see Greta on her screen going, yeah! and even though I might be a male in this project, I think this project has really taught me the importance of listening. And especially when we're doing all these interviews, in reality, I am basically, the words that we have are all in our interviews. So we are literally taking these words and just, I don't want to say theaterfying them, but kind of just like making them into a monologue and making them into a script that makes sense. So for me, it's been very easy to just say, okay, these are the stories. This is how they speak. It's just a matter of translating it a little bit, but also letting the voices of the pieces speak for themselves. We worked a lot with, we change the words, but we don't change the value of those words or the meaning behind those words. And I think that has really like helped us like stay on this track, sort of. And in Malta, we also face a bit where like there aren't many female directors, there aren't many female writers. So it's important that tradition is continued, and we do push more people into that field, I guess. I don't know if Annelise or Lara have something to add there.
No, I think well said. Like, yeah. So it was considered in terms of like, listen, it's a project for women, and we just want to make sure that we are equipped to deal with these stories. And we have had questions where people were like, okay, but what about the male perspective? Don't you want to hear about the male characters and the story, whatever? Which was like, you know what, fair enough. Like, yes, male perspectives, whatever, are probably mostly valid.
Probably mostly.
But at the end of the day, it is. The aim of the project is literally getting women's stories into light because there just isn't a place for them. So we just thought it was important. Like Gumbine said, to just listen. And the story wrote itself, to be honest, because they were amazing storytellers. So, yeah.
So you guys kind of mentioned this a bit before. You mentioned this, Gump, that you had someone go through and kind of like keep the voice. But who took the lead when it came to finding the character's voice? Because obviously you have a lot of voices that go into this whole project. Because obviously you have your three different writers' voices, you have the voice of each person you have interviewed, and then you have to come up with a voice for the character that kind of encapsulates all those people.
So the way we went about it was we all took a story and kind of wrote... First we set down the boundaries, because that was a big one, like... logistically, if this is a traveling show, how many actors can we have on stage, and how does that affect what we can do with the person, right? So we went down to like, okay, it's a monologue, it's 45 minutes long roughly, so this is a single woman, we kind of all decided that she's roughly in her 20s, and then we wrote and we came back and we had three very different voices. In the end we kind of went with the version that I had come up, where she's a bit more tongue-in-cheek, she's a bit more sarcastic, she makes fun of the family members a little bit, and that kind of came down to not even just a question of the scene, like, does it work in the scene, because the scenes worked on their own, but, you know, if you're sat there for 45 minutes, what voice works best for this character? And we decided, like, okay, she needs to be a bit funny, she needs to be a bit sarcastic, because of the stories we ended up choosing, she's probably going to be from a village, probably from more south area. And that kind of started to set up the voice. So once we had kind of gone, okay, I think Centina is going to sound a bit like this, I was like, okay, cool. We have an idea. Let everyone continue writing these scenes. And then my job was to kind of go over and be like, does this sound like her? Does this make sense? But even that was like layered. Nothing with the writing process of this show was easy. As in, it came easy to us because I think we're a group of friends who were like, you know, I don't like this. And no one takes offense. And we're like, yeah, that doesn't work as well. Let's fix it. But it's very multi-layered. So we'd write the scenes. I'd go through and voice her. And then after that, for example, we sat with Annalise's grandparents and aunts and whatnot. And we went through like, okay, does she sound like a woman from a South village? So maybe like a Zabar woman. And we found things that weren't even a question of voice or a question of text, but a question of, I said in a line, there was a word. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it, Glitter or Toby.
Is it?
Go ahead.
Oh, it's all right. Say yeah. It. Go on. I'll put a marker on.
So I said in Maltese, it's Matifim Shkat. And this translation means like she doesn't understand a thing. And to me, that word was like a really basic, because my family uses, I don't think about where that word comes from. And had this process where she was reading it to her family. And they just kind of went, listen, you might not want to use that word. And we're like, why?
They got us. They fully got us.
They were like, what?
I'm so confused. I did not know this word was a thing.
Yeah, see, okay. So this is what we mean by like, Malta's a tiny island, but villages have their own languages and things change. Because in Rabat, where I come from, really no one cares. But we do have a culture of like pretty, swearing is a way to like say hello to someone. And basically, cut comes from the Italian word cazzo, which means penis. Which, you know, to us, like, I didn't think about that because to me, like, it's just cut, like, it's just a word, you know. And her family was like, Anne, that's like pretty strong vulgar language for this lady. And I'm like, oh my god,
really? They found that a strong vulgar language.
But it's we speak about cultural, and I think we kind of go culturally Maltese, but like it breaks down into isms and into places and whatnot. I come from Rabat, if you've been to Rabat and or if you've grown up there, like I have, people start off by saying like Araminau and then swear. So like, look who's here, swear, and that's not offensive. It's just how we
it's like a term of endearment.
Yeah. It's I think for like
in a way.
UK audiences, it's like the difference between someone from Glasgow and someone from, I don't know, what's like like the Midlands. You know, they might swear at you, but they're not doing it in a way to hurt you. It's just the language. But that was a thing we hadn't considered pre-writing, because we're like, oh, we have Centina's voice, we're sorted, great, all good. And then we read it out and we're like, oh no. Or things that came up that we didn't think about as people writing in this era, like I think Nick at a point mentioned an electric piano, was it? Something like that. I think it was like an electric synth piano or something.
I think it was. I think it was a grand piano. Or and it was Lara told me that like if you had a piano, it was a marker of status because you needed to have money to have a piano. So it was really important that like we made sure that like, does that fit the character? Because basically we wanted a musical element to this character. So rather than piano, we switched it to singing, which like doesn't necessarily have any sort of status with it because it's all coming from the voice, you know what I mean?
So, but even that, like the process of, I think, voice, we generally think of it as like, does it sound like the same person writing, you know, and what is this person's way of speaking? But it got very deep and like, oh, okay, contextually this makes no sense. If we're saying that this woman comes from a family that's like middle to probably lower class, they're not very financially well off, they wouldn't have a baby grand in their house. They wouldn't, you know, I think at the point we were playing with this idea that they went abroad and like one character does, and we're like, do they all go as a family? And we're like, we don't know about that. So the voice became also kind of split on a level of like, okay, voice in terms of context, voice in terms of character, voice in terms of continuity throughout the play. But that was kind of our process of meshing it all together.
So let's take that and move forward a little bit. So, you know, we've just been talking about finding the voice. Let's talk about finding the person with the voice, shall we say. So you right now have a call out for auditions for this role. So, you know, let's talk about it. What are you specifically looking for? Who would be the person you want to audition for? You would be like, wow, this is the exact person. This is the name of the character. What like characteristics of the character do you want to kind of see? What do you think would kind of you know, you talked about like different village dialects. What's the sort of what's the vibe? We got there in the end, but what's the vibe?
I like that question. What is the vibe? Love that.
Yeah, yeah, so like you said, we have a call out for auditions at the moment. So if there's any female presenting person out there who wants to audition, please go ahead. You can email us or find our details on the Facebook page / Instagram. And we shall send over more information to anyone that is interested. Auditions will be on the 27th of February in the morning, but you'll get like all the details whenever you email us, so go ahead and do that, guys.
Were they done online, the auditions, or were they in person?
No, so they will be in person, and we split it in two parts. So the first part is like a workshop, warm-up section, and then the second part is like an individual slot where people can come in with a monologue that they've prepared. Well, we gave them the monologue and they would have worked on it, and then they'll come in and do their part.
Okay.
And then from there, we'll contact them later on once we found our voice to do the accent. So I think an important, it's not even, it is honestly, it's the most important thing, in my opinion, at least. They have to be really, really, like, amazing with people. So they have to like know how to get on with the elderly generation, because there's a lot of interaction points in the script. So we want them to be able to hype the audience and be like, oh, you're not going to talk to me? Like, oh, I didn't hear that. Like a bit of panto style kind of. Because we do want to entertain at the end of the day, you know? It's like, let's get these women on their feet. Let's dance, you know, stuff like that. So that's very important to whoever is interested in auditioning. They do need to have good Maltese. Obviously, as we said, the script is a Maltese, so a strong knowledge of the language is essential. I think they also need to be open to just exploring things and have an interest in history. Like, just I'm not saying like know all of the history days, obviously, but it would be really nice if they know, like, oh yes, my nana used to do that also, you know, like they're interested in like our ancestors. Yeah, our ancestors, their nanas, what they did and stuff like that. It's just we want someone who is passionate as much as we are, and like I said, they can be open and they can work with people, and also it's a traveling show, like they'd have to go around different homes, so also they need to be able to be quick on their feet. Like, what if something happens? I don't know, what if my, this is in theater in general, mind you, but especially with traveling shows, what if the speaker doesn't work? Oh, what happens then? That sort of thing. So they need to be flexible, adaptable. But honestly, we're a very open team. So like, we're not like, oh, you have to be the best and you cannot make mistakes. Like, we're really not that sort of type of team, which is why, in fact, in the beginning, we put in a workshop so people can like not feel that stress. Mm. Exactly. It's less, it's less of a pressure, really. Yeah, and important note, The person that wants to audition should, the playing age is around 20 to 25. The playing age, right? So not what their age is. They just need to look in that age, just so that the character fits the timeline that we've written in the script. Yeah, but if they have any questions, you guys out there who are interested, do email us or message us on Facebook. We're a lovely bunch to talk to, I promise.
Yeah, they are.
I think...
Go ahead, Nikki.
I think to what Annelise was saying, as we were already talking amongst ourselves and as we were talking to other people, it's been really evident that, like, even if you don't identify with any individual story, this story is going to spark a conversation, or this story is going to remind you of something else. Like, even Toby, who lives in the UK, we were in the break, we were all talking about, like, how all our grands have these sorts of traditions, and some of them do cross over boundaries. So it's the idea that, like, we just want whoever, like, comes onto the project to really, like, take ownership and just feel that, like, in the difference, a lot of the times with theater, our differences actually connect us rather than make us different. So I think that's a really important part, that they just feel connected and that it somehow spurs up some kind of emotional memory, or like even connection to their own grandparents or elder women that they know. So I think that's basically the vibe that we kind of want to get.
We are near the end, so we have our final question we ask on every episode, and that is, what's the next stage?
Okay, now I get it.
Ooh,
that's the
good
whole
question.
Wow. Sing a song, the next stage.
I love that. I love that little, that's so smart. I love stuff like this.
We love a pun and a segue here, you know.
Yeah.
That's so
good. Next stage, we have the auditions on the 27th of this month. For those auditions, you'll be meeting all of us in person. After that, we go through the process of picking the actor to play this role, and rehearsals get going at March, April-ish. Show starts to tour the care homes. Shows start to go out in the central eastern region, thanks to help from the local council there. And I mean, it's one of those weird ones where it's not like a set date of performances. So we'll see how it grows. But alongside all of the shows happening, we'll switch to working then on archiving and setting up websites and places to refer to these stories. So that even, you know, if the shows might last a year, the shows might last 2 years, who knows how many people want to see it. But even after that is said and done, there is... these stories remain on the internet forever. We're kind of playing with that permanency of the internet, that they remain there. Who knows? Maybe it'll open up for public shows. But definitely focus number one would be care homes, reaching out to the elderly, especially during a time when most of them have had 2 years of very limited contact, very limited shows or things happening, and we want to share these stories with them first. But yeah, I think that's everything we have lined up. If I missed anything, Anne or Nick?
I was just going to add that there's this idea of us giving back to the community that gave us these rich stories. So it's like the women gave us their time, essentially, to speak with us. And I feel like it's like a circle now, you know? You gave us something, and now we're giving back something to you, even though they've probably enriched us more. but yeah, it's this idea, really, of like, I feel that in a community, as well as with community theatre, the idea of like giving and receiving is very much so at the heart of it. And I don't mean it in this weird, like, oh, I'm going to save people now sort of context. It's more in a genuine, like, sweet, like, thank you for this. We appreciate it. This is our interpretation of it, and we hope you love it, essentially.
Absolutely. I think with community theatre, if, like, regular theatre, the focus is on this, like, artistic excellence. Focus number one in community theatre is the communication. It's building up the rapport, getting to know these people, and opening up theatre to, you know, a group that we tend to, unfortunately, ignore, because most productions that we have locally are aimed at the 20 to like 50 people who can both physically go to the theatre, afford to go to the theatre, are in that culture. And the idea with this project is that we go back to the villages, we go back to the roots, and we share it with everyone, even people who might not, you know, have grown up culturally being like, oh yes, it's Saturday evening, I'm going to go to the theatre today, because we care about the community. That's focus number one.
Which is why, in fact, we collaborated with the Eastern Regional Council, because we were like, the council is, I feel like the council is working with the community at more of like a ground level, sort of. Because if we did look for funding elsewhere, obviously. But in the end, we sort of settled on the council because we felt that they could, they're more approachable and they're more aware of what's happening around in their community, which is true. We just had a meeting like last week and they were so, so supportive of the project. I think they're proud of the project. So
absolutely. And we're looking for community spaces. So if someone's listening and their village has, and they run like their village library or enough tombola hall or something, and they're interested in this show, those are the type of spaces we're trying to get to. It doesn't need to be a big fancy theater. The idea is that it can be set up absolutely anywhere and be performed anywhere to reach as many people as possible, even people who might not usually have access to the big fancy theater spaces, or financially, physically, culturally, and all otherwise. The idea is that the show is for the community in all of its aspects.
And where can we find you? If people want to get in contact with you, where can they get in contact with you?
Sure. So you can find us on Facebook, Facebook/Kisbeat Mensia. Instagram, same thing, @KisbeatMensia. Or if you want to email us, it's kisbeatmensia@gmail.com. KisbeatMinsija. Yeah,
don't worry about it.
Absolutely got that right.
We're going to have everything down in the description, so don't worry about that.
We also have a phone number in case those mediums aren't accessible to you. So, yeah, we'll give you the phone number. I mean, it's on the page, but if you want, we'll also give you the phone number so you can put it in the description. Because why not?
That would be very good.
Yeah. Look out for the green icon, green telephone icon on our socials, and you know you've made it to the right page.
Mm-hmm. So follow us for more cute stories.
Guys, this has been absolutely amazing. I'm really like in awe of this whole idea and have just how much I think it will do good to everyone who sees it, not just the elderly. I'm really happy and I'm really excited and I can't wait to see this thing. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about the whole process and about the whole writing with three people. I think you guys work together amazingly and I hope to see you all soon.
Thank you, Greta. Thank you, Toby.
Of course, thank you very much. And that was Lara, Nikki and Annalise. Get involved with the show if you're interested. It sounds like a really, really cool concept that I'm sure everybody can relate to. You know, here at The Next Stage, we're super, super proud of them. We're really excited to see where the show goes. And, you know, you should be too. Keep up with them on the socials. And if you are interested in auditioning, then yeah, get in contact with them. You can find all of the relevant information in the description below. But for now, as always, we'll see you at The Next Stage.